Welcome to the Shortwave Report for June 23rd, 2006. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion recorded from a shortwave radio in Northern California. Listening to shortwave at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio and a schedule of English language broadcast. To help you with this, I'll announce times and frequencies at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's www.outfarpress.com, you can find a schedule for dozens of international broadcasters in English. There you can also listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from China Radio International, Radio Netherlands, Spanish National Radio, and The Voice of Russia. We'll begin with 3 reports from China Radio International. In East London, 1,000 people protested against police victimization of British Muslims. The European Union is working on getting funds to an impoverished Palestine, but are still making demands on Hamas before they will release any money. One of Saddam Hussein's latest lawyers was shot dead Wednesday after being abducted by men in police uniforms. China Radio International.
Some 1,000 protesters have joined a rally in East London calling for an end to the victimization of British Muslims. They were demanding a fresh apology from police over a raid in which 2 young British-born Muslim brothers were arrested and 1 shot. Organizer of the march, Murtaza Ahmed, has called on police to stop criminalizing and mercilessly slandering whole communities.
And let's start working together with the police and making sure we get better intelligence out there so mistakes like these are not made. Because when things like this happen, hard work that the police have put into community cohesion goes back 10 years, 15 years.
Police carried out the raid after receiving the intelligence that an attack on London was being plotted. The 2 brothers were questioned but later released without charge. London police have apologized over the incident.
EU Commissioner for External Relations Benita Ferraro-Wagner has met top Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas to discuss a new fund the EU is setting up to funnel international humanitarian aid to the Palestinians. After Monday's meeting in Ramallah, Ferraro-Wagner told reporters that although Europe supports the Palestinians, it is the Hamas-led government's responsibility to assist its own people.
That is to renounce violence. That is to recognize Israel, because this will be the partner in the peace process, and also to stand by those agreements that the former Palestinian presidents and governments have done, like Oslo or like the roadmap.
International Mideast negotiators have agreed to channel the aid through a World Bank fund for healthcare, utilities and social services, while continuing a boycott of the Hamas-led government. The setting up of the fund is an acknowledgement that the international aid freeze imposed after Hamas took power in March is impacting harshly on ordinary Palestinians. Ferraro-Wagner says the fund is meant to give a quick cash infusion to the most destitute Palestinians, while sidestepping the Hamas government, which has refused to recognize Israel's right to exist. Western powers have refused to help the cash-starved Palestinian government until it meets these conditions. One of Saddam Hussein's main lawyers was shot dead on Wednesday after he was abducted from his home in Baghdad by men wearing police uniforms. Khamis al-Obeidi's body was found dumped at a roundabout in the neighborhood near the impoverished Sada city region. Bushra al-Khalil, a Lebanese member of Saddam Hussein's defense team, accused the Americans of being responsible for al-Obeidi's death. She said it was a consequence of their decision to stop giving protection to defense lawyers. It is clear that they have no intention of letting the public opinion hear our defense, and they do not want us to defend in a legal and a correct way. Unlike most other lawyers involved in Saddam's trial, al-Obeidi chose to continue to live in Baghdad despite the tenuous security and the previous killing of 2 members of the trial's defense team last year.
Those reports were from China Radio International, heard from 8 p.m. to 11 at either 9790, 6190, or 6080. Also in the morning from 7 a.m. to 9 at 13740. All the times I'm announcing are for Pacific Daylight Savings Time, so adjust them to your time zone. Hello to the listeners of KMEC in Ukiah, California, and World FM in New Zealand. The shortwave report may be downloaded as a podcast by going to www.radioforall.net. Next, Spanish National Radio. The chief prosecutor in Saddam Hussein's trial has demanded the death penalty for crimes against humanity. Then a press review on Saddam's trial. The Spanish northeastern region of Catalonia passed a referendum to give it more autonomy, but opponents claim that the 50% voter turnout makes the results invalid. Israel targeted missile attacks continue to kill civilians, 13 this week. In Iraq, the kidnappers of four Russian embassy staff members said they would execute the hostages because Russia failed to pull troops from Chechnya. Spanish National Radio.
The chief prosecutor in Saddam Hussein's trial today demanded the death sentence for the ousted Iraqi leader and three of his former aides for crimes against humanity following a 1982 crackdown on Shiites in which hundreds were killed and tortured.
While the prosecutors presented their final statements in about that courtroom, the secret adjourned the trial until July the 10th when the defense team should deliver its final remarks.
Meanwhile, Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki, seeking to show Iraqis that his new government is taking charge, said Iraqi forces would take control of the country's southern province of Mutana from a British and multinational force in July.
A spokesman for British Prime Minister Tony Blair cautioned that the handover of control in Mutana did not mean British, Australian and Japanese troops were pulling out immediately. But Japan's Kyoto news agency said Prime Minister Junichiro Koizumi would announce a plan tomorrow to withdraw Japan's troops who are based in Mutana province. La Vanguardia comments on the trial of ousted Iraqi President Saddam Hussein in Baghdad for the killing of 148 Shiites in 1982. According to the Barcelona newspaper, all tyrants must be tried and sentenced for the outrages they have committed. If Saddam Hussein had been handed over to an international court like the Nazis were in Nuremberg, adds the paper, there would have been greater guarantees that the trial was fair.
The Spanish northeastern region of Catalonia yesterday voted in favor of a reform of their autonomy statute, which will give it more autonomy, but low turnout in the ballot immediately sparked questions about its validity.
Official results showed that with 99.6% of the votes counted, 73.9% of Catalans voted yes to the controversial reform of the statute, which started a fierce debate on autonomy in Spain's region and reawakened sensitivities that date back to the civil war of the 1930s.
Turnout was quite low, with only 50% of Catalans eligible to vote casting their ballots. Mariano Rajoy, leader of the opposition Popular Party, said that the result showed a lack of support for the project backed by the socialist central government.
But Mr. Zapatero stated that the vote was valid and urged Mr. Rajoy and other political parties in favor of a no vote to move on.
At least one woman was killed and 13 other Palestinians were wounded today in the latest of a series of Israeli missile attacks against militants in Gaza.
The strike brought to 13 the number of Palestinian civilians killed in recent Israeli air attacks that they stole that has brought international criticism and pushed Israel to defend its tactics.
According to Israel, these attacks are necessary to stop Palestinian militants from firing rockets into the Jewish state.
Palestinians have condemned the bloodshed and said it would fuel more violence. A few weeks ago, the Hamas-led Palestinian government called off a 16-month-old truce after a blast that killed 7 Palestinians on a beach in Gaza. Israel denied being involved in such an attack.
Al-Qaeda's allies said in a web posting they would kill 4 Russian embassy staff kidnapped in Baghdad 18 days ago because Moscow failed to meet a deadline to pull troops out of Chechnya. Russia urged the group to heed Muslim calls to free the men.
In other news, a U.S. official said that 8 members of a Marine unit in Iraq would be charged with murder over the shooting of a disabled man in April. The incident took place in the town of Hamdaniya in central Iraq and is a separate case from the November 19th killing of 24 civilians in Haditha in which other Marines are suspected.
Those reports were from Spanish National Radio, heard in English from 5 p.m. to 6 at 15385. On to Radio Netherlands. Russia is sticking to a hardline position in Chechnya, where special police forces murdered a rebel leader who wanted to develop a compromise with Moscow. Some Dutch politicians want to legalize the growing of cannabis, but there is pressure against it from the European Union and the United Nations. This despite the fact that producing cannabis is not being stopped. Radio Netherlands.
Moscow is sticking with its hardline position towards negotiations with Chechnya. Earlier this week, special police forces killed rebel leader Abdelkhadim Sadulayev in his hometown of Argun, supposedly after he resisted arrest. The moderate Mr. Sadulayev advocated peace with Russia through negotiation. And as independent analyst Salish Brand has been telling us, he made efforts to distance himself from the violent wing of the resistance movement.
And he distanced himself very much from the previous tactics that the sort of Arab influence side of the Chechens had been involved in, particularly that thing in Beslan. And certainly he had made approaches via people quite close to myself to have negotiations with the Russians, and the Russians not playing ball.
And why was that?
I think it's, you know, as we see with the rest of this famous and inverted commas war on terror around the world, it's actually quite useful for a major government to have these kind of conflicts going on, because it gives them a license to enact various sort of emergency powers which otherwise they would not be able to do. I mean, we've seen that with America, we've seen it with Britain, and they've only got to blink the word terrorist at somebody and they can do what they want.
So did Mr. Sadulayev have much support among the Chechen community?
I think he did, yes. I mean, he was well respected as a popular and, as you say, kind of moderate leader, but somebody who was going to stand up for his Islam, but not let that Islam be compromised in a sort of Wahhabi or extremist manner.
I suppose some people listening to you may wonder, well, if he was such a moderate voice and willing to negotiate, why was he killed on the battlefield?
I think he was killed on the battlefield because the gangsters, to be perfectly frank, of the Kadyrov clan that are running the country as puppets for the Russians, simply don't want to see any other opposition to their position.
So the outlook then for the Chechen conflict is significantly bleaker with the death of Mr. Sadulayev, or are there other voices of moderation who are going to take his place?
Well, I think that the Chechen conflict is depressingly bleak anyway. Because, in a sense, they threw away the chances they had to put things right in 1996 when they beat the Russians.
And so you think that young Chechens looking on at the two wings of the resistance movement, perhaps Mr. Sadulayev being killed in this way, and we have Mr. Sadulayev on the other hand, who's waging quite a gruesome war. He seems to be having more success.
Well, it seems profoundly suspicious to me that the Russians and the Kadyrov clan have been able to catch pretty much whoever they want, given sufficient time in Chechnya over the last 10 years, but they haven't been able to catch Basayev, you know, hopping around the mountains with one leg. And I meet a lot of Chechens who also regard that as suspicious.
That was independent analyst Salih Brand.
Dutch politicians have long disagreed over whether to legalize marijuana and other so-called soft drugs. Now a majority in parliament is considering a law to tolerate the growing of restricted amounts of marijuana to supply the famed coffee shops. European Union Justice Commissioner Franco Frattini has given mixed signals about whether that will comply with EU regulations. Mr. Frattini was in The Hague to meet Dutch Justice Minister Piet Hein Donner, who's decidedly against relaxing the law. Our political correspondent, Christo von Santen, caught up with both of them. He began by asking Mr. Frattini if there was a European law banning the growth of marijuana.
There is an European law under ratification in member states, which, in my view, leads to member states' individual consumption regulation, but doesn't allow general production or even more trafficking on drugs.
Minister Donner, do you see any prohibition from Europe if the Dutch Parliament were to take the decision to legalize growing soft drugs?
Well, the question of legalization is completely out of the picture, because that would be a contravention of the United Nations Treaty. And secondly, Parliament doesn't decide these questions in the Netherlands. It's to the executive office, minister.
He has to have to consent to Parliament, or Parliament can send the minister away, but Parliament don't decide his questions in the Netherlands. Now, anyway, there is the European Framework Decision, which is clear that it prohibits the manufacture of cannabis, and that without any restraint. So, in that respect, also European legislation is opposed to it. There's a clear report by the House of Institute that it would be against international and European law to allow, even to condone, the growing of cannabis in the Netherlands in order to provision coffee shops.
Mr. Frattini, of course, the Dutch minister is an eminent lawman.
Yes.
If he is right, where does that leave the independence of the Dutch lawmaker within Europe?
Well, when we have a common framework, when we have a common ground, we leave member states to regulate within the boundaries. It's a flexible common ground, but not so flexible that permits to go beyond. And the limit is individual consumption, not trafficking, not manufacture of drugs at all. Otherwise, it could have been totally useless to get approved a framework legislation.
Finally, Minister Dollar, if you have to fight that argument in Parliament, and a majority of Parliament wouldn't agree with you, what would be your position then?
Well, the question of whether we proceed or by police or justice against the growing of wheat is a question for the public prosecutor and not for the Parliament.
But Parliament can change laws, can it?
It can change laws, but in this respect there is no question of a law, because any law in this respect would be against the United Nations Treaty and against the Framework Decision. So it is again a question of of allowing it. And that is a question for the minister.
So Parliament has no case at all?
If Parliament wants to change the policy in this, they probably have to fight another minister.
That was Dutch Justice Minister Piet Hein Donner speaking with Radio Netherlands political correspondent Mr. Van Santen. Those reports were from Radio Netherlands, heard at 9845 from 5 p.m. to 7, and at 6165 from 9 p.m. to 10. Two reports from Radio Havana, Cuba. Italian prosecutors are calling for the indictment of the U.S. soldier who murdered an Italian intelligence officer protecting an Italian journalist who had just been freed from being a hostage in Iraq. The Los Angeles Times reporter has described a Pentagon power play when she and two others were rapidly removed from Guantanamo Bay prison camp following three inmate suicides. Radio Havana, Cuba.
Italian prosecutors are calling for the indictment of a U.S. soldier who was accused of killing an intelligence officer in Baghdad in 2005. Nicola Capari was shot dead at a U.S. roadblock while escorting Italian journalist Giuliana Cedrea, who had been released by kidnappers in Iraq. According to media sources in Iran, prosecutors want a U.S. Marine, identified as Mario Lozano, to go on trial for the killing. The Pentagon says that the car approaching the checkpoint at high speed, U.S. troops tried to tell the driver to stop with lights and warning shots. The Italian government has an entirely different version of the incident. No signs to warn the driver about impending checkpoint. The car was not speeding and did not accelerate after warning shots were allegedly fired. Rome has also complained that a proper inquiry is impossible because the vehicle was removed and army logs destroyed just after the shooting. Last week, the court-appointed attorney for the U.S. soldier says that he expects his client to be tried in absentia for murder and attempted murder. Italy has published a report into the shooting, which conflicts with the U.S. version of the event, blaming the troops' stress and inexperience, and said that the U.S. authorities should have signaled that there was a checkpoint on the road. The report denied the U.S. assertion that the military command in Baghdad was unaware of the Italian mission to secure the hostages' release, pointing out that the Italians had been allocated secure accommodation in a U.S.-controlled area. One of several journalists sent packing by U.S. military authorities at Guantanamo Naval Base last week has come out with her story of what happened when she and others were forced to leave. Carol J. Williams of the Los Angeles Times wrote in a Sunday morning's edition of the newspaper, complaining of what she called a Pentagon power play that muzzles already reluctant sources and an unceremonious expulsion to Miami on a military plane, safety belted onto whatever seat is available. She added that in her case, that seat was the toilet. Ms. Williams said she ended up on that plane and on that seat because of what she called a baffling move by Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld's office, in which the only three newspaper reporters who managed to surmount Pentagon obstacles to covering the first deaths at Guantanamo were ordered off the base last week. The reporter for the Los Angeles Times said that Rumsfeld's gatekeepers have long made clear that they view outside scrutiny of the detention operations as a danger to the Bush administration's secretive and often criticized campaign to indefinitely detain enemy combatants. But this time, their actions seemed counterproductive because putting out the Los Angeles Times, Miami Herald, and Charlotte, North Carolina Observer only provoked fresh demands to learn what the government is hiding. The journalist who was kicked out of Guantanamo Bay last week on Wednesday by U.S. military authorities, referring to her job in reporting on the prison, said that what little we learn often comes to light by accident, through casual slips of the lips by military doctors, lawyers, and jailers, innocently oblivious of their superior preference for spin. Carol Williams, who serves as the Caribbean Bureau Chief for the Los Angeles Times, pointed out that the ground rules say that in order to report on Guantanamo, journalists must agree not to have any contact with detainees who are removed from sight at all but one camp during media tours. She said that is why coverage on what is happening there is so important in putting a human face on the prisoners, whose names and nationalities were all disclosed in March under a court order following an Associated Press legal challenge. The LA Times reporter says that some 450 prisoners have been held for years without charges or legal recourse. Their indefinite detention to keep them off the global terrorism battlefield was like a Muslim version of the World War II Japanese-American internment. The article appearing in the newspaper yesterday, the Los Angeles Times, concludes by saying that the thwarting of her mission to report on a U.S.-run prison at Guantanamo by expelling her and other reporters, quote, makes us all the more determined to question, probe, and illuminate the actions of our government, the U.S. government, being waged in our country's name.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba, heard from 4 p.m. to 5 at 9550 and from 7 p.m. to midnight at either 9820, 9550, 6060, or 6000. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or would like to make a donation for production costs of this unfunded program, I may be reached through the website or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. We'll conclude with the voice of Russia. 13 civilians were killed by U.S. forces in a village northeast of Baghdad. Members of the U.S. Congress were not able to prevent the G8 summit from occurring in Russia next month. The U.S. State Department continues to be displeased with the development of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which wants a time frame for the withdrawal of troops from Afghanistan. The voice of Russia.
13 people died, including a child, as a result of Tuesday night's U.S. airstrike on a village to the northeastern part of the Iraqi town of Bakuba. This was said by an advisor to the Iraqi president, Samare. The Qatar television channel Al Jazeera showed a video recording which proves that the killed were civilians and not militants. According to eyewitnesses, after the airstrike, U.S. units opened up fire on the villagers using small arms. Even those in the U.S. Congress who are critical about Russia have to admit that they failed in attempting to stop the G8 summit in St. Petersburg due next month. Yet they remain hopeful that they will succeed in persuading the White House to use the forthcoming meeting to lecture Russia. The U.S. administration says for its part that it is prepared to attend the summit and promote interaction with Russia.
The United States does not view the Shanghai Cooperation Organization as an anti-American alliance. yet has certain reservations about some things it does. This is the bottom line of the State Department's initial reaction to the Shanghai Cooperation Organization's recent summit in Shanghai. The State Department spokesman, Sean McCormick, said in Washington that even though America welcomed the SCO's general concept of a concerted fight against terror, there were certain points it didn't like. A clear reference to the SCO's last year's appeal to members of the U.S.-led coalition in Afghanistan to consider putting a time frame on their military presence in Central Asia, as well as the invitation extended to Iran's president to attend the recent organization's summit. Moscow-based political analyst Igor Zubov comments on the thinly veiled irritation that was hard to miss in Mr. McCormack's statement.
Соединенные Штаты сегодня претендуют на роль главного управляющего миром. Но если мы возьмем растущий Восток, растущую Азию и огромную Россию, то союз Азии и России имеет более длительную, более мощную перспективу, чем то, что...
The United States wants to be the world's top manager. But if we look at the fast-rising East, the growing Asia, and the vast Russia, we can see that the fledgling Asia-Russia alliance has a potential that's bigger than what America and its allies now have, Igor Zubov says. On the one hand, U.S. officials are obviously trying to snub the Shanghai Six and play down its role as a serious regional organization capable of assuming responsibility for what's going on in Eurasia. Hence, all this talk about SCO's cooperation limited only to resolving small border disputes. On the other hand, politicians with no visible links to the Bush administration are out scaring the so-called free world with what they call a dragon and bear alliance. The Wall Street Journal, for example, is seeing what it describes as aggressive anti-American sentiment and a growing military muscle. The less-known conservative voice paper goes even further, saying that Beijing and Moscow want to squeeze America out of Eurasia, set up a new look Warsaw Pact, and establish a new world order where there will be no room for free markets and free ideas. It would simply make no sense commenting on what President Putin dismissed as bluff and rubbish. Commentary was by Vyacheslav Solovyov.
Those reports were from the Voice of Russia, heard from 6 p.m. to 9 at 15595, 15555, or 9665. All the times I've announced are for Pacific Daylight Savings Time. Please adjust them to your time zone. There's an updated frequency guide at the website for this show. The best shortwave frequency guide is available online at www.primetimeshortwave.com. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people to listen to international broadcasts using a shortwave radio at home. It's far simpler than you might think. If you use the internet, listening globally is also quite easy. See the links at this program's website. Every Friday morning, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's www.outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find internet links for international broadcasters, get advice for listening at home, or make a donation for production cost of this unfunded program. Please consider making a small donation to keep this program going. The Shortwave Report is free to rebroadcast upon notification. The Shortwave Report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.